The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. So let's talk about Roseanne Beckett. So she grew up in the country in northern New South Wales, and I have lived in Australia. It is a beautiful, vast country. And when you are in the country, you really are in the country. It can be very sparse and your communities are local to you and you know the people around you. Now, she moved to Taree and she ended up marrying a man called Douglas Annetts. And actually she had two children with him. So it was a relatively successful relationship. She had a son, Peter. She had a daughter, Julie. And she even became the owner of a delicatessen cafe in Taree itself. So she's obviously somebody who's got ambition. She's obviously somebody who's quite community minded, because anybody who goes and gets a shop like a delicatessen, you're going to be dealing with the public day in, day out. And therefore you've got to have a certain set of skills, which is to be customer front facing positive. So that says something about her nature, but also something about her determination. And that is one thing that I think is going to be very clear throughout this. Roseanne is somebody who is courageous, and also she's very determined. And I think that the only reason that she survives what I'm going to talk to you about today is because of that mindset that she's been blessed with. Now, on Christmas Day in 1983, that delicatessen of hers was set on fire. Now, the investigator who comes to actually investigate the cause of the fire was an officer called Peter Thomas. Now, that's a bit of an issue, because Peter Thomas is an officer who should be abiding by the law and acting in an appropriate professional way, but he doesn't. Because Roseanne said that he was one of those individuals that she struggled with all the time, because he was constantly making inappropriate comments around her. He was being really inappropriate around his advances towards her. And she said just in general, he would make really inappropriate comments about her, and it made her feel very, very uncomfortable. Now, on one occasion, he'd even asked her to come down to the station to, quote, grace the place with her beauty. And obviously, she's trying to take that with a pinch of salt. She's politely declining. But then when she politely declines, he says, if you don't, I'm going to come and arrest you. Now, again, some people could say, well, he's just being a bit humorous. He's an officer of the law. He's suggesting that he has this power, and he's having a bit of a giggle saying, well, I'll arrest you if you don't. But that's not how it felt for her. For her, it felt actually threatening. He also said to her that she should listen to the song Islands in the Stream, saying that it could be their song, which is really creepy. I appreciate we're living in more woke times when it comes down to equality and an understanding of the impact of sexual harassment. But when we're talking about this time frame, I think there was more of a nonchalance about sexism, and men sometimes pushed those boundaries because it was culturally and societally seen as normal. So I'm not saying that this was extremely untoward for the times. I'm just saying, on a reflective note, obviously it's incredibly creepy. And also, the problem with the past is that if you as a woman felt that that was very creepy, it was quite hard to actually get the support, because people were like, oh, it's just the way people are. It's just the way guys are. Just get on with it. Nowadays, it's completely different. People are taken seriously when they struggle with these kind of interactions, and understandably, that's a good thing. Now, she also claimed that he actually said to her that if she told the police that her husband Douglas started the fire, then she'd be cleared of all wrongdoing. which is bizarre. Because first of all, Roseanne didn't set fire to her own delicatessen. She wasn't the individual who was there having created an arson scenario. She was asking for support because something had happened to her, not by her. But he's indicating, just blame your husband and everything will be okay. Now, understandably, at this point, Roseanne feels he's gone too far. She makes multiple complaints about this detective and he gets really angry. He's really upset with her. He feels that she has crossed a boundary he is completely unhappy about, even though he is the one that has essentially broken all the boundaries. And he tells the individuals who are then investigating that complaint that they're all unfounded. Of course he does. He's not actually going to admit the kind of inappropriate behaviour that he is getting involved in where she is concerned. Now, in April 1994, that officer, that detective, actually ends up charging Roseanne and Douglas with arson. So he goes through with his threat, essentially, and involves her as well. Now, all of those charges are dropped because their lawyer highlighted, firstly, how flawed the case against the couple were. And because of this, it didn't even go to trial. And secondly, it obviously comes down to the fact that that particular detective is really angry with Roseanne. He's really angry that she's dared to go against him. Now, sometime after those traumatising events, which would have been horrendous for the couple, Roseanne and Douglas divorced. I'm not saying that that was because of it. I'm just saying that we all know how it feels when you go through a very stressful event. It can bring you together or it can actually tear you apart. Now, in 1986, Roseanne meets Barry Katz. He's a mechanic. And the reason that she meets him is her son is actually doing an apprenticeship. So Peter, her boy, was working at a motor repair business, Katty's Body Repairs. So they get to know each other and Barry ends up going to Roseanne's house. There's a bit of a spark, a frisson between them. And I would say, uber quickly, they end up getting married.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111 and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Because within a year of meeting, they tie the knot. And I do think that's impetuous, particularly when you've got children. I'm not trying to judge Roseanne. I appreciate that lots of people want to find a partner and feel better when they're in a relationship. But I think that when you've got out of a divorce and you've already got kids, meeting somebody and marrying them within 12 months is not necessarily the best thing to do, primarily because you are not aware of who the person really is. Anyone can behave well for a year. It's as simple as that. Most people can behave well for a couple of years and then their true colours show. Now, Barry had four children of his own, so it's now a blended family, and that can also bring a lot of extra stresses and strains. So statistically, you are far more likely to break up when you're in a blended family than when you are in a biologically related family. He also had a history of quite severe mental health issues. So he had bipolar disorder. He took lithium for that, which obviously is a good way to treat it. He had been admitted into a psychiatric clinic in the past because of his condition. So that shows that at times it can be a little bit out of control. But essentially, lots of people live very happy lives and very happy relationships when they've got bipolar type 1 or type 2. Now, sadly, Roseanne's marriage to Barry is ill-fated. It really is. It goes downhill from the get-go and he's violent. In one instance, he's actually broken down a door. He's assaulted and threatened Roseanne. He's also threatened his children. So again, he has really poor impulse control. And he's also somebody who doesn't care about threatening kids, which demonstrates a lack altogether of boundaries. And we get to 1988. Roseanne's now reporting that Barry's actually physically assaulted her, he's hit her in a fight that would actually later be called the Rock incident. However, the police take no action. So essentially, she's told them that she's been violently assaulted and they are not supporting her in any way, shape or form. And that is terrifying on a psychological level. If the very powers that be don't offer you their hand in support when you're dealing with this kind of violence, then you cannot rely on them at any point. You will feel like you are closed off from getting any kind of justice. So she begins very bravely a civil assault proceedings against her husband. And she later goes ahead and takes out a restraining order against him, and that meant that he wasn't allowed in the family home, and rightfully so, he's violent. And then in the May, he actually begins sleeping in his office, which is just actually across the road from the house. Now, between June the 8th and the 17th, he's also taken into the Northside Clinic. That's a mental health facility. And I suppose that we can assume that he's obviously feeling stressed, and stress certainly exacerbates mental health issues, and that could be the reason behind why he gets admitted into that mental health facility. So things are not working well for either of them at this point. Now, in February 1989, Barry, Roseanne's husband, although they are having big problems and essentially are estranged, he's then charged with the sexual assault of his children, which is heinous and harrowing and horrific. Now, some of the charges reference instances which actually occurred prior to Barry even knowing Roseanne. So this is the children saying historically when these events have happened, and she wasn't even in their life at that point. And at this juncture, Roseanne is actually given custody of them because they had briefly been in the care of the local family community services. Again, what does that tell you about Roseanne? The very fact that she's taken in children that aren't related to her and are actually to do with her ex-husband to be, that in itself tells you that this is a compassionate woman who wants to do the best for those children. Now, the youngest actually moved to live with other relatives, but Roseanne ended up looking after three of his children. And she was also, because of his mental state, given control of Barry's business temporarily. Now, that must have been incredibly frustrating for him. I appreciate that for anybody out there who's created a business, if all of a sudden you have lost the control of something you've built up and your ex who you don't like and you feel has now got your life has control of it, it's going to make you deeply resentful. That goes without saying. We can all empathize with that. Doesn't matter how grotesque Barry's actions have been, the reality is that is going to cause a deep fracture and resentment within. We get to July 1989, and at this point, the assault proceedings against Barry begin. So this is the assault where he punched Roseanne, so we're not talking about the sexual abuse at this point. Now, on that case, two of his own children gave evidence against him. Also, Roseanne's own son, Peter, and Peter's friend, Shane Golds, who is an apprentice mechanic with him, they also gave evidence in Roseanne's favour. So there were a host of witnesses, two of which are literally the children of the perpetrator in this case. So I would just suggest that when you have that group of people all saying the same thing, it's probably because it's based in truth. We get to August the 24th, 1989, however, and the police, out of the blue, in spite of the fact that Barry's the one who's meant to be on trial, suddenly raid Roseanne's house. And during this raid, well, they conveniently find a pistol. So at this point, Roseanne, out of the blue, is arrested and charged with a number of offences, and there's a lot of them. These include assault and trying to have her husband murdered. So at this point, she's charged with 9 counts. And there are a lot of counts, aren't there, here? Count one. That involves an event which was referred to as, quote, the Rock Incident. So this one, it alleges that on the 2nd of May 1988, Roseanne had wounded Barry with a rock, very specific rock, said to be 5.5 kilograms. Not sure that anybody was present with the weighing scales, but clearly just looking at a rock, they've rounded up, it's a 5.5 kilogram one. Apparently he required 4 stitches for the wound it caused on the back of his head, and his back was also injured as a result. Barry claimed that Shane Golds held him down and Roseanne had hit him. Very dramatic. Just gonna throw it out there. If you were held down and somebody took a 5.5 kilogram rock, which is a pretty big rock for anyone to actually lift up, particularly if you're female, and to then bring it down on somebody's head, you'd be lucky to have a head at the end of it. 4 stitches, that sounds super minor for such an altercation where you're physically pinned down and somebody is smashing a rock onto your head. But I digress. I'm just throwing in my own idea of such a circumstance. Count two, that was regarding false evidence, because apparently on the 3rd of July 1989, Roseanne had said that at no time she struck Barry Catt with a rock in court. So essentially, she's now being told, because she's denied the fact that she hit him with a rock, that's made her liable for lying, essentially, and it's false evidence. She also had falsely accused Barry of assault. So now, her telling the truth about being violently assaulted by him is false, and she's getting done for that as well. Count three, this is referred to as a Swan's Crossing incident. And I'm not talking about some kind of crossing, well, lots of swans go past. I'm talking about an area. So this alleges that Roseanne, quote, maliciously did wound Barry Catt between the 2nd and the 30th of March 1989, where Barry and Roseanne were apparently having a picnic at Swan's Crossing, which seems very idyllic. I don't know whether she brought the rock that time, probably too big for the picnic basket. Probably would have meant the egg sandwiches couldn't fit in there and the scones would have been problematic. So obviously she probably left the rock at home at that point with the weighing scales. Now Roseanne reportedly became really angry at this point because Barry had mentioned his sister, Mary Warwick. And I don't know about you guys, but I think that we all know that the mention of a sibling on a picnic is something that would incense the best of us. My goodness, what does he expect? You can't just throw in names of people that you're biologically related to and not expect some kind of explosion. What is this man trying to do? He's dicing with death. Honestly, it's ludicrous, and yet this actually happened. So, apparently, Roseanne had been slicing lemons, as you do, probably going to put it in the iced tea. And when he mentions Mary Warwick, she starts to push the knife into the picnic blanket. Now, I'm just going to say, I'm a female. I can only ever comment from a female-centric perspective. But if I'm on a picnic and my husband or partner pisses me off and I've got a knife in my hand and I can stab my picnic blanket or some grass, I'll stab the grass because I don't want to damage my nice picnic blanket. So I'm already struggling with this story. What woman would purposefully and willfully damage her nice picnic blanket? Apparently Roseanne hadn't got the message, and according to Barry, that's exactly what happened. Barry, of course, horrified that she's going to affect that picnic blanket, says, "Don't do that." And her response to that is, "If you tell me that, I'll fucking stab you too." So now she's getting super aggressive and threatening that if he prevents her from ruining said blanket, he's going to get hurt. And she apparently then poked him twice in the chest with a knife. And then she stabbed him in his left side under him.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food. And before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
His ribs. Not very effectively, because Barry walked away from this incident. And then apparently she approaches him in the car. He says he's not going to get in because he feels that she's going to stab him again, and he then makes his own way home. Roseanne later apparently bathes his injury and said it didn't require stitches. So, apparently this all played out on a picnic. Sounds like a great day. Count four, that was for assault regarding the cricket bat incident. I kid you not, these are the proper titles of these incidents. And that was said to have occurred on May the 5th, 1989. Barry at this point claims he's just talking on the phone in his office at 11 p.m, just having a chat, just chatting away, when Roseanne picks up the house phone. I immediately have a problem with this story, guys. I immediately have a problem with this story. I come from a time where my mother got a phone when she moved into the home that I grew up in, and that phone line was shared with a neighbour. Can you believe that? Not only was the phone attached to the wall, it was also attached to somebody two doors down. And she'd have to pick up the phone and sometimes the guy would be chatting with another person or vice versa. It's very awkward. In the end, she got her own line. But the one thing I know is, back in the day, we weren't the most technologically advanced as far as phone lines go. And I have never yet been in a situation where, in the past, it was possible to have my house phone connected to another office in another place where somebody else had a phone. Just suggesting, in my limited knowledge, this doesn't make any sense. But apparently Barry's just chatting away, and then Roseanne picks up the house phone in a completely different place across the road from his office. She intercepts the call. She hears who he's speaking to. No, it's not his sister. That could have sent her off the edge entirely. But she hears who he's speaking to, and she says, "I don't want you talking to that slut." I'm not suggesting that's how she said it, but that's the best accent I can do. He then puts the phone down on her. Of course he does. This woman's probably got a knife. Where's that picnic blanket? Something terrible's going to happen. So at that point, she goes over to him with his son, Tony and Christopher, and she literally snatches the phone off him. I kid you not. She goes across the road, apparently, even though she has the phone, and essentially she was on the phone and she was speaking to people on the phone that were the people that she wants to speak to, him and this woman. And yet now she's paraded across the road and she's grabbed the phone off him, and now she's speaking to the person on the other end of the phone. And at this point, she's so angry, she grabs the cricket bat and she says, "I will kill you, you C-U-N-T, Roseanne, language." That's a little bit aggressive. And then apparently she hits him in the face with that cricket bat. That causes his eye to bleed, his right eye, in fact. So she's really aggressive, isn't she? I mean, if this is true, this sounds like a woman who's completely lost her mind. This actually sounds like a woman who would have always been violent, which is really strange, because in her history, Roseanne has literally no violence in her past at all. Now, he says at that point, he dropped a bottle of eucalyptus oil, and that would have caused quite a few problems because it's very strong stuff, and it would have got in your eyes and caused you to certainly have had some watering, and your nose would have been a bit runny. But after that, he leaves, drives to his friend's house, probably without the cricket bat. She's probably hoarded that weapon as well. Count five. Yes, guys, there are more. These relate to Roseanne, quote, endangering the life of Barry Cat. I mean, surely that could have just been incorporated with the knife incident and the cricket bat incident. I mean, I would argue that smacking somebody in the face with one of those or stabbing somebody probably goes down the line of endangering the life of him. This was apparently between the 1st of May and the 31st of July in 1989. At this point, it's alleged that she maliciously caused him to take a poisonous dose of lithium, which apparently he was taking for his bipolar disorder. Apparently, she spiked his milk in the fridge with a harmful dose. Now, if you were to spike somebody's drink in the fridge with lithium, you would have to hope they didn't have any sense of taste. Because the thing about human beings is we have a really sophisticated taste system. And let me tell you now, if you added a lethal or harmful dose of lithium to the milk, you're gonna know if you're drinking it. But again, who cares about ration, reality and truth? This is going down in one of the charges. Now, Barry's lifelong friend, Adrian Newell, let's all remember that anybody who is called lifelong friend in any case is probably not the arbiter of truth in those circumstances, because you do have a bit of a bias to your lifelong friends. This person had actually been so concerned about that milk that he'd taken a sample of the drink and he'd actually had it tested. Okay, Adrian. Sounds very engaged. Count six was that on the 28th of July 1989, she'd allegedly asked James Morris at the RSL Club to murder Barry Cat. Just casually. You know, at the end of the day, I'm at the RSL Club seeing James. May as well have a bit of a word about whether he can murder my husband, Barry Cat. At the end of the day, I've tried to poison him. I smashed him in the face with a cricket bat. I've stabbed him and he's still alive. Maybe I'm not the person to go through and do this. Maybe James can help me. Count seven was that she'd solicited someone else, Vernon Taylor. Why not? If James can't do it, maybe Vernon's your man. And apparently she asked him to murder her husband between July the 15th and August the 16th, 1989. It's strange to me that these are very, very specific charges, and yet the dates aren't necessarily massively specific. You would imagine that if you're asked to murder somebody, you'd probably be like, oh, it was definitely July the 16th, because, you know, I'm one of those people who remembers things that stand out. And even though I have some strange experiences in my life, murdering people isn't something I tend to do on a regular basis, so kind of stuck with me. But no, whole month can go by, not quite sure what date it happened on. Maybe it was every day. Maybe she's just turning up at Vernon and James's every day going, murder my husband, murder my husband, murder my husband, whatever. Count eight, on June the 24th, 1989, in spite of failing, obviously, on two other occasions to get somebody to bump off her husband, she reportedly encouraged another person, Leslie O'Brien, to kill her husband. She is relentless. Also, she isn't very sophisticated if she's doing that, because there's a lot of people in quite a small community who are all going to be like, oh, you know what? Roseanne's been acting a bit weird. Why? Well, I don't know about you, but I've been noticing that she's been asking quite a few people if we'll kill her husband. You're not going to believe it. She absolutely did that to me too. Really? Really, Vernon? Absolutely, Leslie. To be honest, I've been thinking about doing it. You know what? Maybe we can get together, get a cricket bat, figure out what to do next. Honestly, no mention of money, by the way, at this point. Just randomly going around and asking people to kill somebody. Count nine. That related to her possession of the pistol, which was very surprisingly, when you consider that she's never had a pistol in her life before, discovered in a drawer in her bedroom on the night of her arrest. Who'd have thunk it? Who'd have thunk it? Roseanne, have you been out shooting? No, I don't. I don't have a gun. Do you not? No, I've never had a gun. I'm not interested in guns. Really? Yeah, yeah. I don't have them. What if I look in your drawer? I'd rather you didn't, because there might be some other things that are incriminating there that I don't want you to know about in my private time. I'm just going to open it slowly. Oh, there's a pistol here, Roseanne, and a cricket bat. And hang on, there's three names, Leslie, James and Vernon. What have you been planning? Honestly, I kid you not. I'm making light of this because it's bizarre that all of this happened, and it gets even worse. So now they've discovered a 32 caliber revolver, and of course she doesn't have a license for it, but I guess that we can just add that to her weapon collection so far that I've talked about in this video, which certainly is a knife, a gun and a cricket bat, and obviously killers for hire. We get to November 1990. At this point, Barry's in court because of the alleged sexual abuse and abuse of his children. And guess what happens, guys? Barry is acquitted. Yes, Barry, violent Barry, man who has literally had his own children say he sexually assaulted them. They're like, yeah, no charges to answer. This is despite the fact that two doctors who examined the children concluded that at least with respect to the two female children, it was clear that they had been sexually abused. So actual experts saying, without a shadow of a doubt, these kids have been sexually abused, that didn't matter, because Barry, I would say, has a few bent friends. It's as simple as that. We get to the 7th of May, 1991. At this point, poor Roseanne, who's been charged with every possible charge under the sun and some others that probably don't exist, her trial begins. And you can imagine, can't you, psychologically, where Roseanne is at this moment in time. She's probably thinking to herself, the world is completely upside down. I know that I'm telling the truth. I know that this is just BS, and I am going to hope that justice will prevail. But of course, a lot of people do go to court believing that justice will prevail and then get banged up for 50 years, just throwing it out there. But look at some of the statistics at the end of this video. It's argued in court that Roseanne was this manipulative, calculating cow who basically wanted to take Barry's motor repair business. Because of course, what we don't know about Roseanne is that she's actually a fully qualified mechanic. Forget the delicatessen, that's so last week. Now she wants to repair cars. I just made that up. She's not qualified in any way, shape, or form.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food. And before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Highlight the ludicrous nature of this. Maybe she just wanted to pass it on to her own children. And apparently in court it was said that she pressured Barry's children to lie about him sexually abusing them. And of course, Roseanne's just so unbelievably manipulative and so great at coercing the children, they just go ahead and do that, in spite of the fact that a doctor found injuries consistent with sexual abuse. But let's just put that to the side in this moment. Who cares about reality and facts? They also in court suggested that Roseanne was so manipulative that she was able to convince doctors to have Barry admitted to the psychiatric hospital. Because, I mean, that happens all the time, doesn't it? I mean, I get it. In the 17th and 18th century, that kind of happened to women all the time. Husband got a bit bored with you, decided that you had some kind of hysteria linked to your womb. The next minute, you're banged up for the rest of your life on a mental health ward, and you get to have people come in on a Sunday and laugh at you. That actually genuinely did happen. But what I'm saying is, in the modern era, that's not how it works. If you are very unwell and you are put in a position where a psychiatrist evaluates you and it is believed that you need to be put into an inpatient facility for your own good, that will happen. But they're not going out there actively dragging people off the street. And no matter what a wife feels, a psychiatrist is not going to be like, okay then, we'll go ahead and do that. Because again, she had a delicatessen. She's neither a mechanic nor a psychiatrist. So essentially, in court, they're painting this horrific picture of Roseanne being this calculating and devious woman who had tried everything to take everything away from her husband, including his life. Now, Roseanne is obviously in court thinking, am I in the Twilight Zone? Have I fell through the looking glass? Is this some kind of Hammer House of Horrors episode that I just didn't realise I'd been cast in? Because it just does not make sense. It's like Black Mirror in our modern day, isn't it? So she is saying, I haven't done any of those things that I've been accused of, and this whole case against me, it's been fabricated, and it has been fabricated as part of a conspiracy against me by my estranged husband, Barry Catt, and by Detective Sergeant Thomas, who's been coming on to me for years and has hated me since I refused to put my husband in the frame for a fire that he didn't actually create. And he's made me feel like my life is hell because I've refused his advances. Now, she brings in that the purpose of the charges against her is basically all about helping Barry in his court proceedings, because at the time he had initially been appeared to be losing those court proceedings. She said, I didn't ever own a gun. I've never even seen the pistol, which was found literally in my house. She said, I've never asked anybody to kill my husband. I didn't poison him with milk. I didn't overdose him on lithium. And in response to that, actually, it was noted that other people, in fact, quite a few other people, had drank the same milk and were fine. So this apparent lithium poisoning doesn't affect people who've never taken lithium. And you would surely get more of a reaction if you're not used to the drug. And yet, the guy who apparently is used to the drug and takes it on a daily basis essentially did get affected. Makes no sense, because it's nonsense. Roseanne actually said that the incidents of assault, which she had been charged with, hadn't occurred in any way, shape or form like Barry had described. For example, let's take the rock incident, the 5.5 kilogram rock incident, because obviously we know exactly. They probably had the rock. They probably found the rock. They've probably gone out, found the rock, brought it in, weighed it, proved it to the jury. That's how bent this case is. But essentially, the rock incident, there had been a fight. And that fight was where Barry had hit her in the face with a closed fist. At that point, her son Peter and his friend Shane had actually had to pull him off her. She had gone and seen a doctor. Her face was really bruised, really swollen after the attack. That was reported and registered. And this had actually occurred at Barry's own sister's house, Mary. Don't mention her name, she might lose it in court. But Roseanne said it was actually his sister who had hit him with the rock. And the reason that had happened was because it had been an accident. She'd actually been meaning to hit Shane because Shane was scuffling with Barry after pulling him away from Roseanne. Now, the medical report said that the side of Barry's head had been grazed. Didn't refer to any back injury, so that's an absolute exaggeration. And then Roseanne talks about the cricket bat incident. And she said that Christopher and Tony had gone to Barry's office to pick things up, to help them basically with their homework. They hadn't realised at this point that Barry was in his office at the time. So Roseanne then hears some screaming. So she goes over to the office when she hears that. And when she gets there, Barry is fighting with his two sons. And she actually hears him saying he's going to kill them. Now, this is a man who's very violent towards her. She takes that seriously. So as she enters, Barry goes ahead and throws that bottle of eucalyptus oil. It didn't break. He threw it at her and he threw it at the children as well. That had gone into her and Tony's eyes and that actually caused blurred vision, as it would. The police then attended that actual incident and observed that Barry was drunk. So it's reported when they looked through the window and saw Barry that he wasn't injured at all. But then when he answers the door to them after a delay, he has a small cut above his right eyebrow. Later, apparently he needed 3 stitches for that. But they have looked in, seen that he is the one who's drunk. He is the one that's belligerent. And he is the one who, yes, has a small injury, but in the context of what I've just said played out. She also said that she could never have intercepted that phone call prior to her arrival at Barry's office, as he obviously claimed that she had, because the phone between the house and the office didn't allow this function. So that's game over, isn't it? That's clearly a charge that's ludicrous and be thrown out immediately. And also, Tony and Christopher supported Roseanne's account of what had occurred. So his own sons are saying, yes, the way that she's describing this is correct. And then she denied the whole Swan's Crossing incident. That's another charge that she had regarding the picnic. And she said, I didn't invite him on any picnic. I had gone to Swan's Crossing. Barry had followed me there. And actually he came over to me while I lay on the ground and then he starts stabbing the rug with the knife. Now she said, I did put my foot out, so he tripped over and he'd fallen either backwards or onto his side. So she doesn't deny the incidents occurred, but she's saying, listen, I wasn't the aggressor in this situation. I'm not denying I was at that place, but he wasn't invited and his actions were reprehensible. Now they called witnesses. So Jan O'Brien was one of the witnesses. She was actually the woman that Barry had been on the phone to during the quote, cricket bat incident. She said that Roseanne had suddenly come onto the phone call and that during that phone call, apparently she told her Barry was a sick man. Apparently she'd then put Barry's two sons on the line with both apparently telling her identical accounts of how their father would abuse them, which makes no sense whatsoever. Seriously, first off, we all know that that phone wasn't actually connected to the office, so she never had that conversation initially where she interjected the phone call, because that's impossible. But even though she goes over because the boys are screaming because the father's attacking them, and she's dealing with trying to stop that, the idea that in some kind of mad rampage of violence, she then gets the phone, doesn't just tell this woman on the end of the line how upset she is with this man that she thinks is sick, but then gets the boys who are his biological children to go on identically about the abuse. So what the story there is it's suggesting that she's coached these boys to do that. It's just making literally no sense whatsoever. Another witness is called Gary Jeffrey. So he had apparently been having a barbecue when he was approached by Barry after he had allegedly been stabbed by Roseanne at Swan's Crossing. Apparently he'd had to give him a t-shirt to hold onto the wound in an attempt to stop the bleeding. So now we've gone from this incident being a negligible one where really there was no injury apart from a scratch to now he's intensely bleeding and he requires somebody to get the wound covered with a t-shirt. On October the 18th, 1991, after, I don't know, a jury of clowns listened to all of that information. Maybe it was a jury of clowns. You know those really daft ones who are always getting knocked down by the little ice cream truck that's small and driving around in that circus experience? Maybe one of those clowns was a deciding vote. But essentially, Roseanne was sentenced to 12 years and 3 months in prison. This actually happened. And she got a non-parole period of 10 years and 3 months. Now, let me tell you, this was an extremely long sentence because the average sentence for a murder at the time was 11 years. I mean, that's ludicrous. Can we just be clear? I mean, it's almost an incentive to murder somebody you don't like if it's only 11 years you're going to get. But for her, it was even longer. Literally, it was longer than a murder sentence. This doesn't sound at all twisted, does it? This doesn't sound anything like a conspiracy. No. Nothing to see here. Now, a lawyer, Bruce Miles, actually commented that the charges were essentially a series of domestic violence issues, which they were, if they were true. They also said that stories like these happen a penny a day, a penny a dozen in the domestic violence court. And he said if she'd been tried there, she would have maybe received 6 months in prison if she had been found guilty. But of course, she wasn't tried there. She was tried in the equivalent of what we would have in the UK, which is a Crown Court. It's where the super serious sentences can be passed. Now, after Roseanne was sentenced, Barry's children withdrew their claims of abuse against him. What a surprise. What a surprise when all of a sudden the woman who's been looking after them and making sure that they've been taken care of financially is now banged up. They decide that the person who's going to be able to do that from now on is not the heinous monster that they actually know he is. We get to 1993. Roseanne's appeal was dismissed. In spite of the fact that any of us could have looked at the charges, looked at the court case and tore it a new arsehole. And that's being polite. Now, one can say, well, okay, Emma, what if this is just one of those cases where the jury struggle because it's basically Barry's word versus Roseanne's word? And to some degree, you could say the prosecution developed a really effective strategy and did a blinding case, and the jury sided with Barry over Roseanne. You could say it is indeed a case of he said, she said. But the truth is, from the get-go, the police were absolutely weighted on the side of Barry. But the truth is, Barry was an abuser. He was an abuser in the eyes of his children. He was definitely an abuser in the eyes and experience of Roseanne. And also, there were a ton of other people who would support that. So it was reported that the charges against Roseanne were fabricated at this point in an attempt to have Barry cleared of the sexual abuse charges against him. And also, who comes into the frame at this point as being a questionable individual? Ooh, could it be investigator stroke detective Peter Thomas? Could it be that he has a bugbear against Roseanne and decided that he wanted to orchestrate her downfall and in doing so gave a lot of weight to this particular case against her? Because the thing about that detective was he was really close friends with Barry. And he had this huge grudge against Roseanne because she'd made those complaints earlier against him during the arson investigation. So before we move on, let's just take a peek into Thomas's background and let's have a look at his character as well, because I'm going to guarantee that all of that reinforces the view that he's as corrupt as hell and that Roseanne was and is 100%.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Then innocent. But the detective Thomas would do everything in his power to incriminate and secure a conviction against her, which is terrifying because it could happen to you, it could happen to me, and indeed it does. Peter Thomas. He had been a police officer in New South Wales for 21 years before he became a private investigator in 1991. Also, guys, those of you in Australia will know this, but boy, the corruption that went on in Australian policing is absolutely harrowing, particularly from the 70s and 80s to the 90s. It is way better now, I get that, but if you want to look at historical cases, it is well worth doing. They were literally involved with gangs, they were people trafficking, sex trafficking, drugs trafficking. It is absolutely terrifying. Like, you could literally disappear. Like I said, that's changed a great deal now, but back then they were basically running a racket. Now, for six of these years, he had been responsible for investigations into arson as part of the major crime squad in Newcastle. From 1993 to 1995, he was then president of the Queensland Association of Fire Investigators. And there were a ton of instances where Thomas had indeed falsely accused innocent people, planted evidence, and bribed or intimidated witnesses. This guy's a whole heap of wrong. For example, in 1985, he arrested Errol Taylor. He was a friend of Roseanne, in fact, and he arrested Errol for growing marijuana. Errol was acquitted, and it was determined that the evidence had been planted. And I don't mean that the marijuana had been planted by Errol. I mean that the actual marijuana was planted, taken to Errol's, put there to try to incriminate him and make him guilty. Thomas, at this point, was found to have wrongfully dealt with exhibits in the case. I mean, I think that's a bit of an underestimation. You physically take these exhibits to place in somebody else's home so that they are charged with a serious offence. That is not wrongfully dealing with exhibits. It is breaking the law. In 1988, he arrests a man called Jake Storium, and this is for allegedly burning down his own successful muffler business. I'm not going to deny it, guys. I did have to look at what muffler was. First of all, I thought maybe he just dealt in nice scarves. And then I thought about some other odd ideas, but then it turned out it was just to do with like silencing parts in cars. Now, though Jake was eventually acquitted, actually he was also awarded $96,000, didn't even cover his legal expenses. This guy who had a successful muffler business, who was doing well, minding his own business, he lost his home and he did lose his other assets in the process. So his life was literally broken to pieces. He did take civil action, but he actually, and you will not be able to believe this, ended up being in prison for 7 months because he got frustrated and he had an outburst in the court where he threatened violence. So this guy loses everything, then goes to prison for being frustrated with losing everything because a bent copper made him lose everything. So apparently that's okay. This is exactly what the system was allowing. He loses everything but still ends up incarcerated because he lost his temper while trying to fight for the injustice he experienced. Work that out. Make it make sense. We can't, it's nonsense as we know. But Thomas isn't finished yet. No. In 1990, there's a police report that recommends that Thomas should be charged with threatening and intimidating family and community services officers. So these officers were actually involved in conducting an investigation into those sexual assault charges against Barry from his children. So he is intimidating these individuals, trying to do their job and trying to do the right job because his mate doesn't want to go to court for sexual abuse of his kids. Now, Thomas actually leaves the police in early 1991, so those charges against him were never actioned due to this, which is ludicrous because he was breaking and breaching the law on every level. And also, that's the safeguarding of children just being ignored. Now, the jurors and Roseanne's lawyers, of course, at this point, were all unaware of the findings of that report. So they didn't get to actually show that to the jury to demonstrate just how bent these coppers were and how disgusting this level of coercion was. So Roseanne has absolutely been fitted up in this case. Now, in 1991, Thomas had actually gone as far as to falsely charge a couple with a bombing. Then he tried to make the woman provide false evidence against her husband. Have we heard that before? We may have right at the beginning. He did exactly the same with Roseanne and her first husband. Also, 1999, Thomas tries to bribe a woman with $10,000 to falsely claim that her boss had set his hotel on fire. In another case involving Thomas, this is separate to Roseanne's case, in fact, a judge said that to ensure he got the outcome he wanted, he would use fairer means or foul. Basically, he's saying this copper's going to fit you up however he needs to fit you up to get the result he wants. Also, it was said that Thomas had a, quote, propensity to apply pressure in a way calculated to produce false evidence. Well, let's just say it as it is. He threatened people and said, you don't do what I say, you're going to end up banged up. And he actually made those things happen. So he wasn't lying. We get to 2000. At this point, Four Corners make a program which focuses on Peter Thomas and how he basically arrested people for arson incorrectly, including the fact that there was no evidence for going ahead and arresting people. So despite that lack of evidence, they were able to prove he would go ahead and do it anyway. And it was also known that Thomas had a really strong hatred of Roseanne. Apparently he'd spoken to other people saying that he intensely disliked her, that she was a total bitch, and he also called her the lowest form of life. So what on earth was he allowed to work on the case against her when you've got such a bias? You know, as a copper, you're meant to be neutral. And I know it's hard in certain circumstances, but it wouldn't be hard with somebody like Roseanne. She'd never put a foot wrong in her life. So this guy, who who's going around slagging her off constantly, who's also friends with her ex that apparently is the one who's having everything taken from him, and that this Thomas wants to protect Barry over, that demonstrates that they should never have been able to actually have a case where Thomas was working on it against Roseanne. Now, in addition to this, Thomas had a penchant, shall we say, for accusing people who were innocent. Also, prior to Roseanne's conviction, Michael Jones, who was a solicitor, actually wrote to John Avery, who at the time was the New South Wales Commissioner of Police, and he said that this case is already a disgrace. It threatens to become a scandal. And he also said that Detective Thomas was conducting a vendetta against Mrs. Cat. He described the case against Roseanne not only as not strong, but also a farrago of nonsense inspired by malice. I do like that, solicitor. I like the way he describes that. A farrago of nonsense inspired by malice. Surprised there isn't a series that actually has that as a title. I love that. Farrago of nonsense. Anyway, at this point, Roseanne has been in prison for a very long time. Bear in mind, this woman has been incarcerated for a huge portion of her sentence. And it is quite clear that what has happened to her is not just a miscarriage of justice, it's a blight on the justice system in Australia. Now, understandably, whilst Roseanne was in prison, she actually started to use her maiden name again, Roseanne Beckett, because who would want to be associated with what had happened to her by name? And every time Cat is said, she's going to be reminded of Barry, the man who put her in prison. Also, an organisation at this point, Justice for Roseanne, set up, and they started a Free Roseanne campaign, and rightfully so. And she had a ton of supporters, including Mary Court and Joan Murray. And they were actually Christians who met Roseanne on a visit to the prison. Also, another one of her supporters was Claudette Palmer, who was a nun. She also visited the prison. She was actually warned by prison officers to stay away from Roseanne. Sorry, what do you want me to do? We want you to stay away from Roseanne. Why? Just because we think you should. But I'm a nun. God tells me I must reach all those who wish to have me reach them. Well, we're saying that God has suggested that Roseanne is not for you. I'm just going to ignore you because I think you're as corrupt as the police officers involved in this case. Ah, she does have a point there. Sorry, I apologise for the accent. Just got a bit carried away. I was actually picturing the nun in complete white then with a big cross around her neck. I don't necessarily think there are nuns who look like that. Anyway, I digress. Now, journalist Wendy Bacon, she published an amazing expose of Peter Thomas's misconduct. This is in the days where investigative journalists actually investigate and don't just tell people what they're told to tell by politicians. Back then, they did proper exposés. And there was a whole heap of misconduct that was turned up on Peter Thomas. Roseanne actually said at this point that she felt it was almost a miracle how during these really difficult periods, there were these incredible people who just emerged to help her through. That is just testament to the courage and the steadfast mindset of Roseanne. And I think that part of the reason that she was so able to maintain coping during this horrific decade of her life was that she genuinely was a devout Christian herself. She said that she had such an intense faith in God. And she said that in prison, she had this really very open line to God. And she always knew that God was there, and he will have been watching those prison officers who were trying to stop the nun getting to her. I hope those police officers and prison officers feel the little pricks of conscience, because one day their judgment's going to come. She also, as a prisoner, went to the prison chapel every Sunday and just kind of reinforced her faith every single week. Now, in 2001, which is horrific to say because that's a hell of a lot of time since Roseanne has been in prison, but new evidence comes to light. I say it's new. It isn't really new. We all know it existed back when she was tried, but it's now actually introduced. And the key evidence is, in the case against her, that the gun found in her bedroom had actually been planted there by police. Yeah. You know, when they found the gun and she was like, I don't know who that is. Well, it's because she didn't know whose that was at all, because it wasn't hers, ever. Peter Caesar, who was actually a former business partner of the absolutely bent Thomas, went ahead and informed investigators that Thomas had told him that he personally planted the gun in Roseanne's home. He said that Thomas had said he had had people bashed, kneecapped, and basically done over, and also said If you get three or four good guys around you, basically plan your attack in court, everyone sticks to their story and the person's charged and jailed. So now he's even admitted how they actually get to put people who are innocent in prison. Now, in addition to the questionable discovery of the gun in Roseanne's home, a police advisor also said that Thomas's friendship with Barry Katz was worrying. Does it take a decade to say that? We all know that Thomas and Barry Katz were good mates. Why would anybody not see that as questionable at the very get-go? This sentiment was then further echoed in an internal affairs report in 2000, which said that, quote, "One disturbing aspect of this case is the fact that Mr. Thomas conducted the investigation at all, considering his personal involvement with the parties involved. It appears that he had a close friendship with Barry Katz. More worryingly, he had already been involved in an internal investigation following his charging the then Roseanne Annetts with arson. These charges were dropped due to lack of evidence, and there was..."
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Criticism of Thomas's behaviour in the Ombudsman's subsequent report. As a result, thank God, and finally, Roseanne was released from prison. She was released from prison on bail, so it didn't mean that she wasn't going back, but they said there was going to be an inquiry into the case. Now, this is going to be a little consolation. And the reason for that is she'd already at this point served the majority of her sentence. She had been wrongfully incarcerated for 3,652 days. She'd been incarcerated for 10 years. Like I said at the time, for a homicide, the average sentence was 11 years. And Roseanne did nothing wrong and lost a decade of her life due to police and people corruption. In 2003, that inquiry was held. And at this point, it emerges that people have been warned off from giving evidence in support of Roseanne at her original trial by Thomas, who, as we've just heard, was happy to make people disappear, kneecap them, bash them, and so on and so forth. So this guy's got form and will basically make you do his bidding or you will get some horrific consequences. And this intimidation even stretched to Roseanne's own sister. She was actually told that if she didn't stay out of it, he would do the same to her as he did to Roseanne. Also, Roseanne's son, Peter, he was threatened. He was told that if you don't go against your mum, you'll be charged with conspiring with your mum to pervert the course of justice. It also meant that he felt he would lose his apprenticeship along with his friend Shane. So he was indeed encouraged to retract his statement. It was also found that Thomas had threatened an employee by saying, "You know how I handled Roseanne Katz? I'll do the same to you." And this inquiry further found out that when Thomas questioned certain witnesses, some of the interviews took place in an abandoned house in Chatham rather than at the police station. Now, I was going to throw it out there. It's a little bit left field, isn't it? Now, I don't know about you, but if an officer turned up at my house and was like, I need you to come for an interview. Okay, why? Well, I would just think you might have some interesting information to share with us about a case we're investigating. Well, okay, right, I'll just get my coat. We're going on the station. No. Well, are we going to do the interview here? No. Are we going to do the interview down at the court? No. Where are we going to do the interview? In an abandoned house. I mean, if that happened to me, I don't know about you, I'd probably close the door, I'd back away slowly to my phone, and then I'd call the police, and I'd hope that the police didn't have a shared line with the officer who was actually at my door, like in the case of Roseanne and the mechanics that her husband ran. Anyway, it's ludicrous, but this happened. So, for example, one witness called Marie Whalen, she was interviewed at that abandoned house, and during that interview, guess what? She withdrew a previous statement that she'd made regarding witnessing Barry abusing his children. So I think we can all garner from that the kind of interview that happened at that abandoned house. She also withdrew a summons seeking an apprehended violence order against Barry. And she also signed a statement which claimed that she had heard Roseanne say that she was going to get a gun for herself. Now, she later told four people that she'd been terrified and she'd just gone ahead and signed false statements. Also, Shane Golds, who was doing the apprenticeship with Roseanne's son, he was involved with the Rock incident assault charge, and he was also interviewed at that house in Chatham. And guess what? After this conversation, it also meant that he withdrew his statement against Barry, where he'd obviously been in support of Roseanne. And again, it just changed to match exactly what Barry had said happened. Then there's a woman called Patricia Roy. She gave evidence that she'd actually been abused by Barry for 3 years. She'd been assaulted, she'd been threatened, she'd feared for her life at times, which absolutely corroborates what Roseanne has said about how she was treated during the relationship. And the thing about this particular witness was she'd recorded phone calls from Barry where he had been abusive. And phone records actually show that he called her 75 times over a 5-day period, which was absolute stalker level. He'd even broken her nose at one point. But guess what? The chamber magistrate, Paul Couch, who was friends with Barry, had said that he wouldn't help her take action against him. My God. All of these individuals need to be rounded up in a double-decker bus and sent automatically to hell. Genuinely, this kind of corruption is next level. And if you cannot trust the powers that be, you cannot trust anything in your society. Now, at this point, she'd been given an interim apprehended violence order against Barry, but she also said that when she was giving evidence, she'd returned home to find some documentation and tapes with the case missing. And guess what? Her dog had been hung with a chain. Again, whoever did that, you are going to burn brightly with Beelzebub for the rest of eternity. So I hope whoever paid you the money as a henchman, I hope it was worth it. Also, he had several restraining orders against him after Roseanne's conviction. So he had gone on to be violent towards other women, which just speaks of Barry's character. He was abusive in the past, he was abusive with Roseanne, and he was abusive in the future where she was incarcerated. Now, of course, Barry had indeed been taking lithium for his bipolar disorder, that goes without saying, and his doctor was rightfully monitoring his intake. Now, at the time when he'd supposedly been overdosed by Roseanne, guess what? Lithium levels were normal. All of this was there at the very beginning of her trial in the first place. None of it was brought in. Then another witness, they claimed that he'd been asked to acquire a gun which would be used on Roseanne while she was incarcerated. So not only has she lost her freedom, they weren't satisfied with that. They wanted her to be ended while she was in prison. And that individual had gone ahead and reported this a few years earlier when that incident occurred, but he said nothing was done about it. Now, that witness was later given a bullet by two men who attacked him and threatened him, saying that that bullet had been made specifically for him. So what we're seeing here is just that constant pattern of intimidating witnesses and doing it in a very effective manner. Because when you feel that the authorities are against you, you think to yourself, I could genuinely disappear, and they would make it look like no one knew where I'd gone, or they would pin the crime on somebody else and they would essentially get away with it. And that is absolutely terrifying. So scaring people into dropping charges, changing statements, providing false testimony, they were just very effective at this. Now, the clear misconduct of Thomas and the methods that he used to secure the confessions, along with Barry's clear, violent character, all of that serves to support Roseanne's case that she had absolutely been set up, and they had done it effectively, hook, line and sinker. Now, we get to 2004, and at this point, the inquiry into the case determined that witnesses had indeed conspired to frame Roseanne. Judge Davidson found that Thomas could have planted the gun indeed, and he, along with Barry Katz, Carl Padgett and Adrian Newell, may have worked together to set Roseanne up. Really? You think? I mean, I don't think there's a may in there, is there? I think there's a they did set Roseanne up. Now, that judge said it was possible that the jury's guilty verdicts were substantially influenced by unreliable evidence that Thomas presented, Kat presented, Newell presented, and Thomas's police partner, Carl Paget, also presented. So they worked very effectively together to conspire to create this false narrative, and it was just swallowed by the jury. It was also said that Adrian Newell, and it was actually his abandoned house that those intimidating interviews occurred at, that he had both motive and opportunity to contaminate the substances he removed from Mr. Kat's refrigerator before they were submitted for analysis. Apparently, he had a lot of sympathy towards his friends Barry, and he hated Roseanne. Judge Davidson also said that Thomas had an improper motive to secure a conviction against Roseanne by means which might include the manufacture of arranging or giving the evidence known to be untrue or not believed to be true, and that he also had a propensity for so acting. So basically, he's just calling him a massive liar, a habitual liar, and somebody who cannot be trusted. Now, 6 of her 8 convictions were quashed by the New South Wales Court of Criminal Appeal, with 5 of those being sent for retrial, but it was eventually, thank God, decided that the retrial would not go ahead and the charges were ultimately dropped. I mean, the very fact that they were even considering retrying somebody who's obviously been fitted up is ludicrous. But again, the wheels of justice turn and they really do not like turning back. Now, Dr. Bob Moles, who's a legal academic and also a campaigner against miscarriages of justice, i.e. a good guy, he wrote, "What happened to Roseanne is a perfect illustration of the systemic and deeply entrenched mates network, which can be called upon to protect the perpetrators of such illegal activities." And that's actually a massive understatement, isn't it? Because what we're talking about is criminals working together in positions where they should never be allowed to achieve. Now, the Crown, unbelievably, did not actually offer Roseanne an ex gratia payment. So this would be a payment that was made out of goodwill. So they wouldn't have had to actually say they had done anything wrong, but they'd just make sure that she was, shall we say, remunerated for the loss of all those years, which is impossible to do. But at least it kind of makes life a little bit easier. But they wouldn't do that. They were like, oh, you've lost a decade of your life, move on. So at this point, she understandably and rightfully decides that she's going to take the route of seeking compensation for malicious prosecution. Now, this is pretty difficult to prove. So in addition to the malicious prosecution, what she'd need to prove as well was that Thomas and Paget did not believe that she was guilty. And that's pretty challenging, or at least that there weren't reasonable grounds for believing her guilt. So that's the benchmark she has to achieve. Now, in May 2013, Roseanne did win the right to appeal for compensation. And in 2014, Thomas died. And then Barry Capp dies not long after. So they've kind of got away scot-free with respect. Fortunately, in August 2015, Roseanne was awarded a $2.3 million payout in addition to her legal costs for malicious prosecution on 2 out of the 6 counts. Now, that decision was made 26 years after she'd been arrested. It's a long time to wait for some kind of justice. Justice Harrison described the evidence against Roseanne as woefully inadequate, and said that charges made by Detective Sergeant Thomas was an act of vengeance. It was said that he had an arrogant contempt that was intimidating and frightening for witnesses, and his methods were described as extraordinary and overbearing. Roseanne also said, when she won the case, that the Crown fought her at every turn, and that the Crown has spent a substantial amount of taxpayer money fighting to try to prevent her from receiving any compensation. So, in spite of the fact that she was innocent, even the Crown was against compensating her. She also said, rightfully so, that there is no amount of money that will ever heal the wounds. I mean, she must have lost faith in every authority. Because it's not only Roseanne's life that was understandably put on hold and to some degree ruined by her imprisonment. And obviously, it won't be entirely ruined because Roseanne is an amazing human being who has an incredibly deep relationship with God, and she will have found reason and purpose in her experience. But her family, her children, her friends, they suffered the consequences of losing her for a decade. Her son Peter said, "The thing about my life was it was good, and then it was just turned upside down when Mum was arrested." Her sister Joy said, "My mother was really badly affected. She was never the same. She kept saying that she just wanted my sister out of that place." Now, after the release of Rose...
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3. Create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
She actually became the carer for her daughter Julie, because Julie in 2007 was in a really serious car accident in Canada, and as a result of that horrific crash, she lost all movement in her body below her neck. And one of the things that I'm hopeful about that money that she received as a mother is that she'll be able to protect and provide for her children in a way that she wouldn't have been able to do had she not received that money. And it doesn't make up for a decade behind bars, of course it doesn't, but ultimately, I think that she'll be able to provide a really good standard of living because she was receiving that compensation eventually. And hopefully the daughter who's so badly injured will have benefited enormously from her mother being present and from that financial settlement. Now, one of the things that really bothers me about this case is it's not a one-off. It's impossible for me to determine the exact number of people who are wrongfully imprisoned for crimes which they didn't commit. It's very scary to think that the main reason that they're in prison is because people were bent, and therefore those individuals were put behind bars without any clear evidence, and also haven't got people campaigning for them, so it's unlikely they'll ever be able to prove their innocence. And to put this in context, a study in 2017 estimated that 7% of people in prison in Australia were not guilty of the crimes they've been accused of. 7%. That's really scary. And in the USA, the belief is that the figure for wrongful conviction is estimated to be between 4% and 6%. Now, the most common factors leading to the wrongful convictions are official misconduct and perjury or false accusations. Well, that's absolutely entirely true when it comes down to Roseanne's case, so that kind of extrapolates across the masses. Now, since 1973, guys, there have been 194 people on death row who've been exonerated of the crimes for which they were convicted, and yet they were going to be put to death. They were innocent, but in spite of that, they would have lost their lives. Now, one of the main objections to the death penalty is because at some point, mistakes will be made, and that would mean that innocent people would be executed, and that has happened, and we know that's happened. It is pretty horrifying to believe that institutional corruption can mean that people go down for something they've never done. Like, never mind being then killed for a crime they didn't commit. We all know that in a perfect world, the justice system would be infallible, but it isn't. In Roseanne's case, her name fortunately was cleared eventually, but by the time it happened, she'd served her entire sentence essentially, and her life was changed forever. She did get a good amount of compensation 26 years after being arrested. Never buys back the years of her life that she lost. Won't erase the enormous amount of trauma that she suffered as a result. Only God can heal that, I guess. And the great thing about her is I genuinely believe that he will, because her faith got her through. And people have this incredible way psychologically of making sense of things that others would just see as impossible to come to terms with. But whatever she learnt, however she grew, as the result of her incarceration, I imagine has made her an even more incredible human. She's a courageous warrior with a steadfast belief in justice. And though to some degree her justice was cold, I hope that now she's back in the arms of those who love her, that 10 years feels like just a moment in time. Breathtakingly dreadful, isn't it, guys? Because honestly, Roseanne is you. Roseanne is me. Roseanne is every single one of us. And I live in the UK. And let me tell you, right now, the government is putting people in prison for saying nasty stuff online. People are being accused of things that they didn't do. People are getting doorstepped by the police for tweets that they wrote a year ago. Journalists are having that happen. So as much as we would like to believe that institutional corruption and corrupt politicians are a thing of the past. I think we're just seeing the very beginning. And Roseanne's case is testament to these kind of corrupt individuals exist in every single time frame we inhabit. Let me know your thoughts in the comments below. Have you had an experience where you've been wrongly accused? Do you feel a level of empathy with Roseanne? Do you feel that the jury just didn't get it right because they were presented with false evidence? Or do you feel that Roseanne was set up and then everybody played the role that they were told to play, including the jury in this case? It's horrific that she had to fight the system just to get compensated. But I hope to God that that money has changed her life for the better. Take care, guys. I'll see you again next time. That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.